Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on obsolete formats. You could also consider this as films from the VHS era, though not necessarily on VHS. Our film for this episode, our 30th episode, and our first after a little unplanned, unannounced hiatus, is Groundhog Day from 1993, and we have it on VHS, getting it from the Southside Exchange in December of last year.
So, yeah.
This is a recent VHS purchase. Yeah, the film, and of course we are, in fact, recording this episode the evening of
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, so it was a film that got some good reviews when it came out.
Yeah.
Richard Corliss of Time liked it. Gene Shalit liked it. They're on the VHS box, which if you follow us on Instagram, you can see a picture of both sides of the VHS box. Wasn't necessarily a big hit.
Right. Well, I think it made decent money.
Yeah. But has now become a cult film. Because the irony, and this is, I don't know if this is necessarily one that we have to explain the plot to, but it is a film that I think a lot of folks have watched over and over again, much like the Bill Murray protagonist stuck in a loop. A lot of people, this film gets revisited. I know part of our couplehood is we watch this film every early February.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. Absolutely. There was a local movie theater turned bar that shows movies that was showing it on the screen, on the big screen earlier this week. Yeah, so it's a movie that has made it to cult status,
yes.
I think, and has become a cultural touchstone. And evolved that way from being just simply a mere mortal film.
Yeah.
And so I guess all of our focus really is about, yeah, what does it mean to watch this movie in the 2020s? Next year will be the 30th anniversary of Groundhog Day.
Also, post-COVID. Well, I guess not post-COVID, in the middle
we're
of
COVID. Still, yeah, we're still COVID, where, I mean, our sense of time, I know my sense of time has
changed.
And when lockdown was really kind of strict and we really weren't going anywhere.
This might have been a little too close to home.
Well, we did watch it last year.
Yeah.
When, you know, we weren't ready to go out there yet. and the time did kind of feel meaningless and days did sort of blend into one another. And just all of that, everything. Yeah, Groundhog Day.
So I think there's the first thing is, like, we are in Western Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And so we're not that, well, what, like an hour and a half from Punxsutawney.
Yes.
And so there's also that. There's that kind of connection because it is a very Western
Pennsylvania kind of thing. Though, yeah. Should be pointed out, the film was not shot in Punxsutawney.
No. It was Illinois.
Illinois. Which is weird. I will say it does capture Western Pennsylvania very well.
Yeah.
Other than it is a little flat.
That's true.
Where they are, it's not very hilly.
Yeah. And the real the city of Punxsutawney isn't as charming as what's portrayed in the film.
Yes, this is true as well.
It's an old, like, mill town, kind of.
It's an old mill mining town that's a little hard scrabble and has definitely seen better days and has a lot of groundhog-themed things in it. I've been on the ground in Punxsutawney, only in a very few places.
Yeah.
We've driven through it several times.
Cool record store, though.
There is, Backstreet Records in Indiana, or in Punxsutawney. From Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Is there. But yeah, it is. So it captures the mood and the feeling, and for me, 90s nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I'll even say the movie hits different for me when we have a Democratic governor.
Interesting.
You know, because I think it, for me, captures it. It also, I think, is for us, we went to college in rural western Pennsylvania in the 90s. And maybe you could say things were a little behind the times and were a little backward. And certainly there was activities and things that you wouldn't find in more cosmopolitan places. More regressive things, I mean. But, you know, people weren't mean. People weren't sort of mean and violent and hateful in that part of... And it's, for me, different when the mean, violent, hateful people are in charge of the entire state.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, Pennsylvania, as somebody put it so well, when, like, all those weird things happened in Georgia with election laws and weird things happened in Texas, we are one Republican governor away from being one of those states that loses the all-star game and corporations pull out of because they don't want to be associated with the politics of that state. Pennsylvania is one Republican governor away from Georgia, Texas problems.
Yeah. I mean,
like that. And when Tom Corbett was governor, that's how it felt. And so I was like, man, I really miss not hating or being afraid of rural western Pennsylvania. Because it is really beautiful and it's wonderful, and you do have this great sense of history, and some people there can be really great. We have many friends that live in that part of the state.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my friends who's passed on, Father Bob, was a Byzantine Catholic priest in Punxsutawney for years and loved it.
Yeah. I think, like, the we'll get into the film. We're waxing nostalgic right now.
Yes.
But I do think one thing the film captures is that Western PA people do tend to be nice, right? So, like,
yes.
The people he encounters in the town are like, polite and kind and welcoming. And I do think that is something you experience. So, for me, that's also a part of it. Like, oh.
Yes.
You could go to one of these small town diners and people will be polite to you. And
yes.
Well, not all.
Not all.
Not all.
Not all.
We've definitely had those experiences of going to these small town diners and the waitress is the best and the food
and
is great.
It's totally personal and... You know, what is the line once a friend who lives in Johnstown said, you know, Johnstown's the only place he's ever been where you order dinner and you find out about the waiter or waitress's day.
Yeah.
You know, which can be really charming and lovely. And in a weird way, part of the Bill Murray character's transformation is that also in small western Pennsylvania towns, everybody knows everybody's everything.
Yeah.
And he becomes the ultimate townie.
Yeah.
You know, where he knows everybody's personal history and their life story and the meaning of their lives and their personality.
That is so true.
And their routine. And so he becomes the ultra townie.
He does become the ultra townie.
Or the uber townie.
Maybe that's what the film is about, becoming the uber townie.
Yes.
So I think, you know, to kind of jump into the film a bit, most people probably know the film. I was actually on a phone call today with somebody from Central America, and we asked if they knew about Groundhog. He's like, well, I know Groundhog Day. He said, oh, I know about the movie. Like, so even it's made its way down to Central America, they know the movie.
And you know, was this the film that turned Bill Murray in from kind of fun, cool, comedic actor to this guy who would make art?
So you think about it, like Rushmore would have been 2 to 3 years afterwards. So that's like, you know, I think a lot of people...
And getting hooked up. Yeah, that Wes Anderson hookup. Yeah. And
I think a lot of people look at Groundhog Day as his switch, as the film that started making that turn for him. Because you think about, like, Rushmore, the Royal Tenenbaums, Broken Flowers...
Lost in Translation.
He has really made quite the shift into these more dramatic roles.
Yeah.
And I think it is the way he carries Groundhog Day. I mean, it is a comedy, and it's, you know, you could say it's a romantic comedy.
It says so on the box. That's what Gene Shalit thought.
Yeah. That it's, you know, it has these fantasy elements. But I do think the way that he took the arc of that character, you know, was, and you think, like, you look at, like, say, Scrooged, which was him still, like, very over the top.
Yes, it was still the Stripes, Caddyshack Bill Murray at that moment.
Where this, there seemed to be a maturity in his portrayal of this character.
Which I wanted to get into later, but I think now is the perfect time to talk about the New York Times article from a couple years ago. And just how difficult and kind of... This is sad, actually, because I do have... We talk wax nostalgic, such warm and fuzzy ideas of Groundhog Day. But everybody was pretty miserable as they were making this movie. And one of the things was for Bill Murray... The things that really, like, bothered him was that through all the takes and all the times that he did the same thing, he had the very difficult, unenviable task of having to show character progression while shooting the same scenes over and over again.
Yeah.
In particular, the Ned Ryerson scene was really difficult. They were outside. It was February. They had to be somewhere where there were no leaves on the trees. Mm-hmm. And so they were outside in February. And in that scene, one of the cars wasn't very reliable and would stall out. Mm-hmm. And then they would have to reset the scene. The foot in the puddle... when he steps on the side, was incredibly painful, and so he could not be shocked or yelped, and they would lose takes because he would react to basically sticking his leg into a deep puddle of ice water, and then of course you do that, then you got to go back to the trailer, you got to get dried off, you got to get a new pair of pants, you got to, you know, reset everything. And so it was really stressful and terrible, and everybody was miserable and cold, and Bill Murray and Harold Ramis did not speak again until Harold Ramis was terminally ill.
And you think that's, I mean, they've been together forever. They were in Stripes together. They
Ghostbusters.
They collaborated together for decades. I also, you know, in... There also has been some other articles saying that they kind of disagreed on the arc of the film.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray did want to focus more on the serious side and the philosophical side, and Ramis still wanted a lot of the comic elements.
Yeah.
So I think there was this clash, and unfortunately, it ruined a friendship, and they never collaborated.
Again, it made a piece of art that many people enjoy very much, but that Bill Murray performance is quite remarkable to think about. You have to plot out, even though you're delivering maybe sometimes the same lines.
Yeah, you have to plot out this time.
This time, this space. How is this person a different person?
Yeah. Or what's his headspace in this particular moment in time?
Yes.
Which has to be really hard to say, you know, it's Groundhog Day again. How many different times did he say that line?
And how does he feel differently when he says, it's Groundhog Day, that, you know, 15th time or whatever.
Yeah.
Is remarkable. And I think one of the things that the film does really well is that, and this is part of also the life that this film has in internet chat rooms, thinking about, you know, whether it's conspiracy theories or trying to, like, figure out the hidden, you know, how long is he in this loop?
Yeah. I think there was estimates. I think Harold Ramis said he thought it was 10 years.
Yeah.
Because it takes you... I think his reasoning is it takes you... It would take him 10 years to get really good at some of the things that he was doing.
Yeah.
I've
heard 30.
There's other estimates. There's also... Harold Ramis did become a Buddhist. And, you know, there's that belief it takes 10,000 years to evolve to the pinnacle of humanity.
Could it have been
even more than that? That's one of the theories out there. But different people have tried to estimate the time because, you know, the way they show progression of time is that, you know, he goes from not knowing how to play a piano to becoming...
And he's really good at flipping cards.
He's an ice sculptor.
Ice sculptor, speaks French, memorizes French poetry.
Yeah.
All of those things, and I think that is maybe the other thing about the film for me, where, like, a lot of these other, you know, does he get out of the loop because Rita falls for him, or does he get out of the loop because he finally buys Ned Ryerson's insurance?
Yeah.
Does he get out of the loop because he becomes a decent person? And I think for me, what's so fascinating is that this character does have the nihilism.
Yeah.
You know, he sleeps with whoever, he steals, he dies. Nothing matters, yet by the end of the film, he learns to care about all of these people. Even though these people are also caught in this time loop and maybe they're not real people anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you take humanity out of time, what is humanity?
Right.
And what are people and what are consequences? Yet he still has then... He develops this deep emotional connection.
Yeah.
To that community.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, there's that line he says to Rita. I think it's something like, I've died so many times, I don't know if I'm... a person anymore or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think he, like, yeah, I think that's a great point, that he got to this point of not caring anymore, of killing himself in so many ways, being around these people for this, like, brief moment in time, but it's like a brief moment in time you're repeating all the time, but it's for a really long time, and he kind of develops this care for others.
Even though
the
time loop and they'll just be the same people and the kid's going to fall out of the tree again.
No matter what.
No matter what he does. But he still makes a point of catching the kid. Which is, I mean, is really, really remarkable and existential, I guess. If you know.
And he even tried the old man to help the old man multiple times. Or I think twice. We saw it in the film twice.
Yes.
He tries to help him. But you're right, he still saves that little boy and says, I'll see you tomorrow, knowing that's the exact same thing. He's going to climb in the tree,
kid's
fall out.
And not
thank
him.
Because he doesn't know. The kid's that doesn't know about the loop and isn't aware and will do it again and again and again.
Which is, I think, is remarkable. And maybe, you know, the point of the film is that it is a film about compassion.
Yeah, I mean, I think his arc is kind of interesting. So, you know, there's the initial shock and realization that he's caught in the loop. And then he goes for very hedonistic things. It's like gluttony and avarice and lust. Like, he goes through, almost in a way, the seven sins. Like, he kind of goes through
he does.
All of that.
He does.
And then it becomes conquering, and he tries to conquer Rita. And that doesn't work for him. And then he goes into death, a death phase. And then he goes into betterment, right? So it's kind of like this interesting arc that his character takes.
Yes. And he bothers to learn things, and he bothers to get good at things.
And I think there's, like, one of the criticisms I read about it was his relationship with Rita, and, like, why would, you know, like, why would Rita fall for him and all this other stuff, and the thought of does he start bettering himself and learning and growing just to get Rita, or does he realize that he wants to change as a person? And so that's kind of also an interesting thought.
Yeah, and I think it also is, yeah, to be a better person. I guess there's a weird cognitive dissonance, I think, for this film throughout. Because it does, you have to have a suspension of disbelief to buy into the premise.
And they don't tell you why he's in the time loop.
And they don't tell you why he's in the time loop. But they don't really tell you for sure how he gets out.
Right.
And they don't quite get for sure the way that maybe the Rita character evolves or evolves quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she has known him, well, I guess in a way, the other thing is, by the end of the film, she has known him for a little less than 24 hours.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no, like, mad scientist, Greek god, which, like, there's, yes, like, there's no curse.
There's no mechanism for this to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a weird thing. It is a film that you can think about a lot and think about very deeply in terms of, well, what would our lives be like if we could just get really good at one day?
Yeah.
Or if we had an infinite amount of time. Well, to become what we're to fulfill our human potential or whatever that is, or had enough time to maybe meditate on who we are, or, you know, and that everybody else would stay the same, you know, is a very interesting, maybe philosophical question. But there's also stuff about this film that maybe you can't think about too hard or you ruin the film.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting push me pull you space. Which maybe also is, you know, was this film meant to be, you know, in theaters in 1993, released on VHS, and, you know, let's make another one. You know, and yet here we are, and, yeah, I mean, we have friends that absolutely adore this film.
Yeah. So the screenwriter was inspired by Interview with a Vampire. He was reading it at the time. And he wondered what it would be like to be immortal and have all the time in the world, and what would you do with that time.
Mm.
And I think he gets human nature pretty right. You know, like, we can look at COVID. There's people who did improve themselves, right? They lost weight, they either read more, they went back to school.
Yeah, took a class.
And focused on themselves and improving themselves. There's some people that ended up volunteering and helping others. And there's people who just kind of hung out on the couch and watched TV all day, right? And I'm not judging any of those.
No, not judging any of those people. And I think
those are very valid responses.
And I think a lot of people just did versions of those things and multiple versions of those things, you know. Sourdough starter,
right? How many people posted on Instagram and Facebook about
that? I've learned how to bake now because I own an oven and flour is attainable.
Yeah.
Which I think is true.
So I do think in that sense, like, he is an everyman, right? Like, this variation of an everyman. And yeah, like, if you could, without repercussion, steal a ton of money or have a windfall of a ton of money, and would you have fun that day and just spend everything? I think most of us would be tempted to do that.
Yeah, like, if there were no consequences. You wake up in the same spot tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I think that would be...
I would probably have McDonald's for breakfast, KFC for lunch, pizza for dinner, as much chocolate cake as possible.
Yeah.
So I do think they do a great job of thinking about that, about human nature and how people would react to being caught in this situation.
Yeah.
And even when he's getting drunk at the bowling alley with the two locals... and he makes a comment about being stuck somewhere with no hope and no future. And they're like, yeah, we know what that feels like. They're stuck in Punxsutawney their whole life. So they're actually stuck in their own weird little loop of not being able to move forward.
And, you know, there's plenty of people like that. I mean, we had a friend who was a social worker who said that, you know, the thing that they learned doing social work, and this was someone... you know, who was college educated, who had career goals and a life plan and a trajectory and an idea, you know, someone who could definitely answer that where do you see yourself in 5 years question, who said that one of the things they learned about a lot of people was that, whatever happened to them today, and whether that was getting arrested, getting evicted, getting in trouble, gas turned off or something, that's what happened to them today. And tomorrow is another set of circumstances that they'll deal with. And so, yeah, I think that's also maybe speaks to the people who would be attracted to this film.
Yeah.
You know, which would be people who probably, you know, could answer that how do you see yourself in 5 years question, you know, and job interviews.
Yeah, I think Bill Murray's portrayal of this character is really good. And I think,
you know, maybe not as successfully, but I do think they do kind of help at least flesh out Rita a little bit more.
Yes.
Across, like, you do learn a little bit more about her and who she is as a person. And she doesn't fall for it. Like, he does make, you know, he has the Nancy Taylor, who he pretends he knows her from a Pittsburgh high school, kind of gets her in bed pretty quickly. But there's at least 5, 6, 7, but you have to assume more times he tried to do the same trick with Rita. And it didn't work.
Yes.
He wasn't able to charm her into bed, and he wasn't able to figure out the right combination that would get her to fall for him and want to sleep with him, and which that was just, he wanted that particular conquest. And so I think through that journey of him trying to get her, you kind of get to know her better as a character and who she is. Yes. and what she's hoping for. And through that kind of rejection and failure, yes, which for Phil might have been the first time in his life that, yes, he had rejection and failure, and how to handle that rejection and failure.
Which, of course, I would be remiss, speaking of that New York Times article, not mentioning that the original ending of Groundhog Day was that then Rita was caught in the loop.
That's right. How devastating would that have been? How dark would that have been?
Yes.
That they finally connected, and they you know that there's something happening between them, and then she goes into the loop.
Which, you know, I'm so glad there's not a sequel to this film, but what an amazing sequel,
yeah,
premise. Because then you would have Phil Connors knowing, you know, what he knows,
yeah,
and trying to guide her through this.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to figure out whatever the things she's supposed to do is.
Right.
But it's sometimes nice to just have one film.
Yeah. No, it is sometimes nice to have one film.
And this film has not received the gritty reboot treatment.
No. No, it has not.
And that's also, I think, part of the appeal of the film, of watching it in the 2020s, is that it is one of the few things that is a singular thing.
Yeah.
No sequel, no reboot. It's just, if you want Groundhog Day, you gotta watch The Groundhog Day, and you're out.
There's a horror movie called Happy Death Day, and so that character gets caught in a time loop and keeps getting killed in the time loops and is trying to figure out the killer.
Yeah.
It's a fun horror movie. I really enjoyed it. They made a sequel, and this sequel explained the time loop and did some other stuff, and it ruined it for me. I was like, I really like Happy Death Day. That was so much fun. And then Happy Death Day 2, or whatever it was called.
It's okay for things to be singular.
It is. And
Run,
I think
Lola Run also
Run, Lola, Run,
has
right.
a very similar time loop thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? The Gunter Grass, the tin drum, also has, or at least time stops,
yeah.
For that character.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's okay to have that ambiguity. I think sometimes it's okay that there isn't a deeper explanation.
Yeah.
If the journey is good enough, right?
If the journey is good enough, I think, which again is, I, you know, I, we tend to be very pathological.
Right.
And we need answers.
Right.
Which is maybe also the why, you know, again, the afterlife of this film on Reddit and other chat rooms trying to unlock the mystery. Well, you know what, though? I think those people are probably profoundly engaged with the film.
Yeah.
In a way that if the film were to just tell you, this is how the time loop happened and why, and then there's an explanation at the end or an intertitle, you would just, you know, okay, you watched it.
Well, you know, you think if it was a Greek tragedy or comedy, it would be one of the gods. You know, it would be like, that's Zeus being crazy again.
Yeah.
That, you know, that kind of explanation for those things.
The gods would have a wager. What would happen if a mortal were to live the same day?
Exactly.
Again? Yeah.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. And it just doesn't bother you that. And again, no sequel, no remake.
Yeah. No, I think it's perfect just to leave it that way. And I think this kind of focus,
even if it is a little imperfect.
Even if it's a little imperfect, but I think I like it for that particular reason. And I guess the other thing is, like, if you got caught in a time loop, would you know why you're caught in a time loop, right?
No, which is, in a weird way, is I think the thing that I almost found charming about M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
If I was helping a Narf avoid some scrunts and it was my first, like, Narf assistance day,
I
would be making mistakes and, like, then the Narf wouldn't be like, oh, I forgot to mention, you know. And now I'm in a leadership position at my job, which is why we've had a little break from podcasts. But part of it is, like, there's these things that I just know how to do, and I've hired some new people. And they don't know those things yet. And so sometimes I'll just reference something in an email and went, oh, yeah, that person's been here 3 weeks. I should explain that. You know, it would be the same thing. You know, it's just there's other flaws with Lady in the Water. But that's profoundly realistic. If your first day of NARF assistance day, you're going to screw up.
Yeah.
You're going to screw up a lot. And you're going to have to learn some things on the fly. Which I think is also kind of delightful and good about this film.
Yeah.
Shall we move to the big four questions?
Yes,
or is there anything else?
I think that's a great idea.
All right. Question one. Is it camp, retro, classic, or, you know, just an old movie?
For me, it's a classic. I mean, we rewatch this movie again and again.
Annually.
Yeah.
And you know what? If it's like on Stars, on like a Saturday where we're not going anywhere and the weather's bad and it's, you know, October, I'm watching Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
We're just are. I'm just going to watch Groundhog Day again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
All right. So what about the socio-political distance, the Bechdel test race? I mean, are there any non-white people in this film?
No, it's a very, very white film.
Yeah.
Which is very Western PA. I was just having this conversation with somebody. It's just like, yeah, Western PA is not very, very diverse compared to other areas.
Yeah. I mean, a former friend who went to high school in Western Pennsylvania had, for a part of one marking period, one non-white student in his high school, and that family left the region.
Yeah.
So I guess you do have to acknowledge that about Groundhog Day.
The women are interesting in Groundhog Day too, because you have Rita, who's a producer.
Mm-hmm.
She is his producer. Initially, she seems a bit weak-willed, but as you kind of get to know her, she's kind of stronger. But she's not really interacting with other women. The other female characters are not very well developed.
Oh, yeah, they definitely do not. In fact, are there any female characters that talk to each other about anything?
Other than saying hi to each other.
Other than saying hi to each other and the old ladies in the car when it breaks down.
Yeah, that's it. You're not getting much interaction. So that part is like a little bit weird. I mean, I guess it is a study of him and who he meets within the day, and so, you know, but you really don't get much.
Yes, these are not rich, textured female characters, absolutely. Except for Rita. The technical distance, or the room test.
So this is so funny to me, because she holds up her checkbook at the auction and holds
up
her checkbook. That still cracks me up, but she holds up her checkbook and is like, $339.83 or whatever.
Like, she knows exactly what's in that account, maxing it out.
Yeah, it's just so funny to me that she's like, here's my checkbook. No cell phones, right?
No cell phones.
There's no, because I mean, the other thing is, if this movie was made today, he'd be filming himself, killing himself, or going off the cliff.
Yeah,
with the
and maybe that's why he can't do the reboot, because he'd have an Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah.
I noticed there were, like, the cars, like, there's a Renault.
Yeah.
There are two Renaults.
The cars are really old.
There's two Renaults
in
the Ned Ryerson scene, and which is, you have to be a hardcore car geek to spot the Renaults in that scene.
Yeah.
And they, when they do the car chase, when Phil kidnaps Phil, which also, he got bit.
That's
that
right.
Scene, which was also a miserable thing that happened to Bill Murray. The car, the Oldsmobile that the Top Hat guy, the blue Oldsmobile, that is probably the newest car in the film.
Yeah.
That is a 93 Oldsmobile.
You're
so that, they got that right off the assembly line.
But it's that,
so that you can tell the dating it.
You definitely the car can casting tell of, it's a 90s, an early 90s film. Yes. Like, there's no cell phones. Not even the big, giant brick cell phones.
That diner looks like a 90s Western Pennsylvania diner. I mean, just perfectly. The big, the hair.
Yes.
The female hair.
Yeah.
Rita's white turtleneck and vest combo.
Yes.
Hardcore 90s. We just dressed like that. How did anybody have sex in the 90s?
Nancy's white coat with white gloves.
Yes. How did anybody have sex in the 90s with that fashion?
Yeah, no, and there's... I think even Elliot... what's his name?
Chris Elliott
has one of those sweaters. Those very...
The Cosby sweater. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Means something different now, too. And of course, we've already said it. Will we watch it again? Of course we're going to watch this movie again next year. Maybe I'll watch it. I just want to watch it tomorrow.
I know. Well, let's get into our own time loop with it.
Yeah.
I do think that Bill Murray, his acting in this film is wonderful.
Yes.
I think he really understands the character, and I think he takes the character on a really great arc. And you care about the arc that he takes. Because he's a character that's hard to like at the very beginning of the film. And by the end of the film, you're rooting for him. And that's awesome. That's awesome that you're able to do that.
Yeah, that is remarkable.
There's also, for me, like... it's not your... I was actually thinking about this as we were watching it. It's also not your typical romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Where a guy meets girl, they fall in love, a guy does something stupid.
There's
no
Baxter.
There's no Baxter. Yeah, so he... Right, there's no... And so I think... I guess in the original, she was supposed to have a boyfriend, and they decide to nix it, and I'm so glad they did.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's better without...
That singularity, yeah.
But yeah, we'll rewatch it again and again and again.
Yes, the ultimate irony of Groundhog Day... is that you want to see it again.
Absolutely.
All right. I think that's what we got.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Dogs weren't too loud this time, I don't think.